Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Well, as you know, 14,000 primary school students, we're told, are at a home at the moment. Veronica be deemed close contacts. Basically, the whole class is sent home if somebody is symptomatic or tested positive. Veronica, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. And you as well, I hope. But and your child as well. But he's been deemed a close contact. So how long will you have to stay at home for?
Well, we were notified on Sunday evening that he was deemed a close contact, and we were to wait further instruction, which we got yesterday. So they stayed out Monday and Tuesday, and he was identified as being a close contact of the pod. So I explained to the school that my son is COVID recovered.
Okay.
And as per the guidelines, anyone who's COVID recovered and has been deemed a close contact don't need to restrict their movements unless they're symptomatic for 9 months. And my son is only 5 months COVID recovered. And I explained this, and I was informed by the school that they told this to public health, and public health has said no, all children in the pod had to stay out of school for the 10 days, regardless if they were COVID recovered or not.
And it's the pod, not the class?
The class went back today. The pod is out for 10 days.
Okay, and what class is he in?
I prefer not to say,
okay,
Joe.
But it's
in primary school.
It's in primary, that's what I mean. And even though you said, and you have it there in front of you, the guidance.
The HSBC guidance version 2.3, and it's a quick reference guide for under 13s, which I looked up, 0.6. And anyone who's COVID recovered, deemed a close contact, does not have to restrict their movements unless they're symptomatic. So, in fact, he should be back in school today. And it's just very frustrating. You know, I'm not, the school are not at fault at all. All they're doing is following what they've been told to do by public health. But we need to come up with plan B, because plan A is not working. Like, this is the second time he's been out of school for 10 days. One, yes, when he was COVID positive. But now he's out again for another 10 days after spending nearly a year and a half out of school.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's the cumulative effect now of all of this.
Yeah, and I just want to know what, like, who is making these decisions? Why is there guidance in black and white? Why is the guidance not being followed?
Well, Norma Foley, the Minister of Education, talking to Brian Dobson, said they're reconsidering the policy, but and they take advice from NPHET. But NPHET aren't due to meet this week. They're meeting next week. So there'll be no change at least until the middle of next week.
And I thought the numbers are only going to increase. The close contacts are only going to increase as the weeks go on. But we definitely have to come up with some other solution, because the one we have at the moment is not working. You know, and I'm sure there's other pupils around the country who are identified as close contacts and they're COVID recovered. Are they being allowed to go into school? Does it depend on who answers the phone? I just don't understand why they're not following the guidelines if that's what they say they're following all along. They're not putting it into practice. So well, if they were, my son would be in school today.
Well, apparently 1,329 schools, primary, second level, have reported a COVID case. Each primary school has an average of 15 close contacts, while in secondary schools, the figure is lower at around 4. So that means half the class is gone.
I know. And I do know, I heard this morning there about what they're doing up in Northern Ireland. And if you're deemed a close contact and you've no symptoms, you can continue your movements, which I think is a good idea. Now, we don't want a big outbreak in schools or out back into the community again. Absolutely not. But they're going to have to come up with a different solution, because we just can't continue the way it is at the moment.
But we
for
haven't.
Parents who work, and also for the children that have lost out so much already.
Well, we'll have a caller who's contacted us, but he's actually at the moment in a testing centre with his two children. But he points out he's been living here for 20 years, originally from Germany, has lots of contact in the German education system. And school children in Germany are tested, antigen tested, twice a week. Very simple test, very quick test. Not for 100% reliable, as we know, but simple and quick and cheap. And as you know, that's there seemed to be from the get-go here a scunder against antigen testing in Ireland, and it hasn't come in with any frequency or indeed volume. Apparently, every Monday and every Wednesday in Germany, each school pupil has a quick antigen test, and that's how they proceed.
Yeah, well, Ireland as a country, and I know we've worked long and hard since February 2020 or March, but the school is only going back now, and as I said, they've lost out on enough. They need to come up with plan B, because this one is not working. It's not fair on the children, and it's definitely not fair on also people probably would have taken last week off, you know, with their kids going back to school, and now they're back at home again.
That's the other thing. Yeah.
And especially that my son is COVID recovered. He should be in school today.
Okay.
Regardless of whether he's a close contact,
but
you
it's a cumulative effect at this stage, and it's mounting up on and not just in primary and second level, but there's other aspects as we're discovering in the Leaving Cert
and
the third level. Okay, thanks indeed, Veronica, for raising that case. There are so many aspects to the to the Leaving Cert results and this incredible increase in points awarded to six times more. Students in the Leaving Cert this year got straight A's than 2 years ago. So we're six times, this COVID, they're six times more intelligent than we were 2 years ago. Alana McSweeney, there's all different aspects to this. Alana, what is your aspect of this grade inflation?
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. I'm devastated, to be honest. I've had a really hard time. It's basically the inflation of points for the courses that has gotten me into the situation. I had hoped to do biomed.
Okay.
And it was on the top of my CAO. I got my Leaving Cert results on Friday. I was delighted. I had enough points to basically do anything on my CAO, so I was confident.
As it stood then. Did the points you got on Friday, Alana, where they... Because you'd always have to expect they'll be up on last year to get into the same course. Were they up on last year?
They were up last year. So basically what happened was I ended up getting my eighth choice on my CAO because the points inflated so much that I was way off. It was an 80-point difference.
Wow.
So, yeah, so it was amazing.
Biomed was 533 last year.
Yeah.
You got 560.
Yeah.
So you thought, that's 27. That's a good leeway. But instead of going up 10 or 15 points, Biomed went up 60 points. Is it 60?
Yeah, 80 points.
80 points.
Yeah, 80 points.
So you never saw the chance.
Yeah, exactly. It was that kind of situation. Like, if had I known that it would go up by that much, I probably wouldn't have put it on my CAO in the first place because I never saw the chance. You know,
and you got your eighth choice, so you went in your head. But can you bring me down? You said biomed first. What did you say second? Do you remember?
Well, I had a few biomed ones in different colleges.
Okay, of course,
I had a biomedical engineering course, and I had some law courses as well. So they were all they were in the 500s, but I had enough points that had the points been raised to what they usually would be raised to, 50 and 20. It would have been okay, but everything went so high that I actually ended up with my eighth choice, which is a sound engineering course.
Sound engineering is very different to biomed, isn't it? I know you have to go down,
Yeah, you know how the CAO works, it's all preference, so you want to put what you want the most at the top, and anything down as far as eight is kind of things you might want to do, or, just in case kind of courses. So,
what are you going to do?
I have no idea at the moment. I haven't accepted my eighth choice yet because I honestly don't know if I'd want to do it. I kind of have to take a while now to figure out whether I should take a year out and maybe try again next year. But then you don't know. Next year we could run into the same situation where the points go up again and then I'm in the same spot, you know?
See, I was reading the State Examinations Commission report, which came on standardisation, on how they came up with these... with the figures. Now they do, as they do argue that we don't automatically accept teachers' judgments, teachers' assessments, and as you know, you had, wrong phrase, the best of both worlds this year. You got the whatever result you got, be it the assessment by the teacher, be it the actual exam, whichever was the highest was used. Now, Norma Foley, the Minister for Education, talking about Dobson 20 minutes ago, said, well, that's what all the students wanted, and there's going to be downsides of that. And one of the downsides, as written in this, it's a pretty exhaustive report by the State Examinations Commission, they basically say that they wanted to downgrade 32% of the grades awarded by teachers. Okay? They wanted to downgrade. Now, they say this is the reason. They actually downgraded it by 17% rather than 32%. And the reason why they didn't go, even though their standardisation process said 32% of these grades by teachers are inflated, the reason they say such a level of downward adjustment was ultimately considered incompatible with the accredited grades policy of valuing the primacy of the school estimates. And I'll expand on another paragraph, which is not sequential, I hasten to add, but it's about this whole process. And they were talking about 2020. Of course, this level of downward adjustment was ultimately not made by the standardisation process in 2020, as it was considered that such a level of downward assessment would place stakeholder, and that's teachers and students, but primarily teachers, and public support for the entire process at risk. This meant that the final 2020 calculated grades results were considerably stronger than the examination results of the previous year. And you can say the same for this year, because as I say, to achieve the objective, this is 2021, to achieve that objective would require a net downward movement of almost 32% at higher level. This is teachers' grades. As will be evident from the final data presented, come back to it, such a level of downward adjustment was ultimately considered incompatible with the accredited grades policy of valuing the primacy of the school estimates. In other words, if they had done what their standardisation process told them to do scientifically, they would have lost the support of teachers in doing. They're depending on the cooperation of teachers to do the estimations, the assessments in the classroom. But the teachers say we're not doing it. That's the end of it. And they were saying the adjustment was so great that the teachers, it was 32%, that the teachers, I'm reading between the lines, that the teachers would have said, well, that's it. You've downgraded so many of our estimates. You don't believe them. You didn't believe one third of them. They eventually said they didn't believe 70% of them. You didn't believe one third of them. Therefore, we're not going to do it again. And that's exactly. Now your sister Maya McSweeney contacted us as well. Mia, Mama.
Hiya,
Mia,
Joe,
Mia and Alana are your twins. Your twins, not correct.
We are.
Well, Mia, you talk about Alana, and then I'll get Alana to talk about Mia, because that might make it a little bit. I'm sure that you two are very modest. Tell us, Mia, about Alana and why you feel so aggrieved for your sister.
Well, I think we've done everything together since we were babies, Joe. Like, we started school together. We did the Leaving Cert year together. We sat our exams together, got our results together, which we were both delighted with. And Alana is so hard working. And I know you have triplets yourself, so you know what it's like to have kids going through the same thing at the same time.
Tough.
Alana's always been that bit smarter than me at school and stuff like that. And that's, I don't mind that at all. That's fine. She worked so hard, so there was no doubt in any of our family's minds that she was going to do superb in her Leaving Cert, which she did. The results were incredible. Okay. And we thought, she's got her course then secured. Then obviously I ended up getting the course I wanted yesterday, and Alana got her eighth choice. We couldn't believe it.
Wow. So what college did you get into, Mia?
So I got into UCD to do English and Sociology, which is the same college Alana was hoping to do biomed in. So the two of us were hoping to be going together. And now, obviously, we won't be unless she ends up getting an offer in the next few rounds. Yeah. Even though there's an 80-point difference, it doesn't seem likely.
So tell us how you got your course. Obviously, the points were lower.
Yeah, so mine's an arts degree. So the points are, a lot lower than a medical degree. So I was happy to get mine. I think I got 474 points, which was 100 points more than I needed anyway to do the course that I wanted to do. So I kind of got lucky. But Alana said something mad to me yesterday And she said, Jesus, aren't you lucky you aren't as smart as me, because you wouldn't be going to college. And she's right. And to think that that's the words coming out of her mouth, they're insane.
So you got into UCD with less on a different course. I accept that. It's a bizarre the way the system is throwing up all these anomalies. The new system.
Oh, completely. I think though, you know, I heard what you were talking about, the standardisation process and the 33%. But I think it's important to look at how the grades were given and the whole system. But I think a lot of it's to do with the government's plans that they made for third level. And I think the CAO, you get the results of how many students applied. We know there was 85,000 students. That's 40,000 more than any other year. Like, you know, we knew how much funding needed to go into third level to open up more spaces, because we knew that this would be a massive surge in entry level points because so many people are applying. Yeah. And I don't think that was really looked after. You know, it's not really our fault that people last year are applying this year.
And the universities, between the whole lot of them, came up with a lousy extra 4,000 places.
They might as well give no places to anyone at that point. You know what I mean? It's laughable. We need 10 times more than that to fill.
And they aren't under any pressure from the CAO to increase places, because the CAO is basically the representative body of the universities.
Exactly, and that's where we should be looking at.
The CAO should be completely independent and almost be... I know it's a computer in one sense, that does the algorithm.
Exactly,
but the CAO itself should be an advocacy body for the students, not for the university. They keep justifying, the universities can't increase places because of practicals and placements. But practicals and placements are a relatively small part of the university body. And in a pandemic, by the way, I believe everyone would step up and say, actually, we will take more students work placements or medical placements or whatever. So you're going to UCD and Alana isn't?
Yeah, so I'm going to UCD and Alana isn't, even though she was more likely to get in than me. But it's a joke. And the thing I was going to say is, like, the colleges, they don't even meet you. They don't know the students they're accepting. They haven't, you know, you could be accepting someone who isn't great with people for a medical degree, perhaps, but then you're not accepting someone who would have done that job flawlessly. So it's really hard. It's a computer and they don't meet you. And it's just a look of the draw. Even if you're 625, they're picking names out of a hat. So Alana really deserved this course. And I'm not just saying that as her sister. But I've seen her up every night studying and working hard. And seeing her break down yesterday when the text message came in was something I've never experienced in my life. I never want to experience again.
Oh, God. And she got upset, did she? Very upset.
Well, she's devastated. Like, I can't believe she's able to go on the phone today. And that's why I contacted in the beginning. Because I hate seeing her like that. You know, this is something that was supposed to be so exciting for the two of us.
But for a course to go up 80 points... is astonishing.
She never had a chance if that's the case. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and how can you plan for that to happen? How do you plan for that?
Can you stay there for a sec? I know you're on a bit of a break at the minute. Well deserved break, by the way, after the year that the 2 years that students have had. Kathleen Dempsey, Joe at rte.ie, 51551 is the text number. Kathleen Dempsey, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
And what's your aspect, your anomaly?
I was downgraded from 4 H1s then to H2, so my points went from 530 down to 474. So I didn't get any of my courses.
Did your teachers give you 530? They did.
Yeah.
And then the
standardisation brought them down to 474.
It's a big drop, isn't it?
Yeah. So I didn't get any of my courses.
See, they dropped you by nearly 60 points. The standardisation process dropped you by 60 points, which is nearly 18-19% you were dropped.
Yeah. Yeah, so I didn't get, like, my first choice, it was business and DCE, so it was 488 minimum points, so I didn't get that. And then my fourth choice was marketing, innovation, technology, and that was 474, but it went up to 476, so I missed it by 2 points this year. Whereas if I had have gotten my initial points that I was supposed to get, I would have been well over.
It's an, I heard it described on radio this morning as a cruel process and a scandal, the way it's done. But it's the way it's developed now. It's and why we don't have enough places for everyone who wants to go to third level is beyond me at this stage. Is absolutely and totally beyond me that we did it for a second level education in 1966. 55 years ago, we introduced free second level education, and we're still waiting 55 years for a third level. Like, and there's a lot of courses that have had no physical contact, and you can have 800 students on a Zoom call or whatever way they do it. And I know it doesn't work for every course, but there should have been more bending over backwards in this awful, awful crisis. Kate, where's Claire? Claire, your daughter, I know she's working today, but tell us her anomaly, please.
Okay, Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Did her leaving cert in 2019 and did very well. Worked extremely hard for the 2 years previous.
This is pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID.
PC, yeah.
Yeah, traditional leaving cert.
Yeah.
I think there was a lady on yesterday as well in relation to this. So 2020, she applied through the CAO. Mm-hmm. Had the points, always had them all the way back, to get onto her course and missed out because of predictive grades. And again, has tried it again this year and the points have gone up again. So it's 58 points in the difference in the last 2 years. Now, my issue
is... So the course keeps running away from her.
Yeah. My issue is that Minister Harris has done nothing for students that did their leaving cert pre-COVID, we'll say.
And what could he do?
Well, first of all, he argued last year that he took legal advice and he couldn't grade inflate those students. I'm sure he knew this was coming down the road this year again. There were 7,500 students that went through the CAO this year with traditional leaving certs. Nothing done again. So the playing field is not level. Students this year had three opportunities, predictive grades, sitting the exam, and combining the best.
Yeah, the best. You got the highest result. You were awarded the highest.
Three opportunities. Students from 2019 and previous had one opportunity.
But this it's a terrible situation for your daughter.
Yeah.
As you say, the points are now running away from her. And they're not running away, they're galloping away from her because of the new system. But that means this year's anomalies, and indeed last year's anomalies, will keep running through the system for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yes. And I think Simon Harris should have done something for these students, whether he allocated a set number of spaces for them using the grades they had or averaged the grades. Mm-hmm. He could have gone back 5 years, 2019 back, and averaged the grades that the course is required.
That's a good point.
And that would have been a solution. Now, I know there were 7,500 students, from what I can read, that applied through the CAO this year in the same situation, and I think it was 10,000 or 12,000 last year. And from what I can see, he's washed his hands. It hasn't been mentioned, and I'm actually wondering: is there anybody taking a legal challenge out there for these students? Because they can't compete with students that have three opportunities this year: predictive sitting exams and combining the best. So.
Yes, and I'm sure she's cast down
devastated,
now.
Devastated last year because she had the points going all the way back to 2004 for the course she wanted. Had them. She was actually carrying anything from 12 points to, I think, 45 over. And she's devastated last year, absolutely devastated. So we said, look, wait another year. I remember Norma Foley saying, we will definitely have the normal leaving cert going in this year. I said, you can hang out another year. So she's gone through the year, and as it was getting closer and closer, we could see no. And then it was announced that they were doing predictive again. So, I mean, there was a whole year in the last year.
So your daughter in 2019, just to remind people, your daughter in 2019 was 12 points, had a surplus of 12 points to do her preferred course, which was, she wanted to do, what was the course she wanted to do again? Language and business. But this year, how far out is she?
She's 58 points out.
Oh,
so she's a surplus of 11 points in 2019 for the course. And now she's 58 points out.
A deficit of 58. Mm-hmm. And we presume the weightings are going from last year to this year. Mm-hmm. And I know the State Examination Commission talk about the bell curve and standardisation. Mm-hmm. But as they say, quite in fairness, fair play to them for admitting it, that we should have downgraded 32%.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew if we did the system in terms of assessment by teachers would collapse because they'd say, you're after downgrading one third, what's the point in us doing it? Mm. So instead of downgrading by 32, they downgraded by 17%.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have, well, I don't know whether that would have, the 32% I'm sure would have affected, would have been a positive for your daughter.
And just to follow on from that, Joe, last year she put in for a transfer because she did do her first year in college. She knew during 2019 to 2020 she wanted to change courses and there was an overlap and she put in for a transfer last year and it came back and said, no, sorry, oversubscribed. She put in for a transfer again this year and it has come back, sorry, oversubscribed. So she can't even transfer, even though she has the modules covered, because it's oversubscribed. So...
You're reminding me of the other situation where the students have got the maximum number of marks available and a significant number of them did not get the course that they wanted. Because it was over, because so many people got the maximum number. I think it's up sixfold on the year your daughter sat her leaving cert, which is 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I know young people are getting more and more smarter. I don't know if it's a measure of intelligence or in terms of exams. Mm-hmm. But they're not six times smarter than they were 2 years ago.
No, I mean, I just had a quick look there before I came on. And I look and say at economics there, that was... we'll just say H1s for this year, 13.6% got a H1. And they have the average for the traditional Leaving Cert between the years 2017 and 2019, 4.1 got a H1. So it's over tripled.
Yeah.
And business is the same. It's gone from 13.7% getting a H1 this year, whilst between 2017 and 2019, 4%. So that's over tripled. And likewise, art... 13.2% got a H1 this year, and for the years, the average years of 2017 to 2019, 2.5% got a H1.
Yeah,
so that's probably, what's that, five times?
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's why I'm on. I'm just very disappointed at Minister Harris not doing anything for this cohort of students, and there is no mention of it. And this was coming down the line. It happened last year. It's coming down the line this year, and he did absolutely nothing. And I mean, they could have allocated places the way they do with allocate places for mature students, allocate places for students that have PLC courses, but did absolutely nothing for those students who do the traditional Leaving Cert. And what he said last year, he could not do anything because legally he looked into it and it wasn't allowed. But if I remember right last year, students were allocated higher results and then there was this thing about the computer and the system and then it was found that a number of them got higher than they should have got and he turned around then and he said, okay, we'll let you keep those results, we won't downgrade you. So how was that legally possible?
Yeah. I still think the colleges, the third level colleges have a lot to answer for. They could have stepped up. They really could with more place. I don't care what anyone says. They're massively resourced. They have incredible campuses. A lot of them modernised.
Mm-hmm.
Trinity Campus, for example, now extends nearly down to the docks, centre of Dublin. By the way, Trinity, since March 2020, the public can't walk through the fresh air in Trinity. You're not deemed eligible and they stop you at the gate, apparently. We had calls about this a few months ago, but I didn't know it was going on for so long.
Mm.
You cannot even walk through the grounds of Trinity, which are in the open air, obviously, because of COVID. They stop people at the gate and they say that policy will continue indefinitely. So and so, if whatever chances you have of getting into your leaving cert, you have no chances of getting into the Trinity Gate to go for your shortcut. But anyway, Claire, that's not the point. I take that point. Okay, yeah. there's more in this after the break. Maya and Alana, thank you so much, and look after each other and stay safe on your leaving cert holiday.
So
okay, Alana, I'm so sorry for you. And you know what your parents said and your friends say, and your twin sister spoke so highly about you. You're great, the two of you are great people. And always remember that, Alana. Hopefully these things will right themselves in due course, but you mind yourself.
And, Thank you, I really appreciate it.
And the two of you look after each other as you have the day you were born. Okay, back in 2 minutes. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Back to so many pupils, primary and second level, being sent home because they're deemed close contacts. Sean Casey is in French Park in Roscommon. What's your family situation, Sean?
Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Joe, we have four kids going to secondary school.
Okay.
And two of them doing the leave cert, one in first year and one in junior cert. And like that, they only started last Friday and they're all home.
And how long are they going to be home for?
It's looking like 14 days.
10 to 14 days. And by the way, this is on the, this is off the back of the last 2 years, is it, when they were at home a lot, as we discovered?
Well, that's it, yeah. Well, one of them's only started in secondary school, but actually one of them is supposed to be for confirmation on Saturday or Sunday, but that's off. Can't do that now. But, yeah, well, it's just the two that's doing their leaving cert we're kind of more concerned about, Joe.
Yeah.
They've missed so much time from school. And what, the oldest lad had been sick, so he had missed a lot of time.
Okay.
Since he was 11, he was sick. So I suppose they're just very annoyed that they're home. And the HSE said that the lad that's vaccinated, the oldest lad, could go back to school, but he tried to go back to school. The school wouldn't take him back.
Oh, would they not?
No.
And did school say why?
Well, they just said that was their policy.
But who? But that's not the state policy.
No, we said that to them, but we still, we didn't have a choice.
They're saying we're independent. We can decide whatever way we want to calibrate it, we will.
Well, they didn't say that to us. No,
I know. But that's what they're actually saying. You were saying that the one that's vaccinated, according to state guidelines, should be allowed back in, and the school say no, he's not.
Well, yeah, when the first fella got vaccinated, we asked him and said, yeah, he's okay to go back because he's fully vaccinated, but the school's not taking him back. And like before, when they were off, there was online and there was all this and that, but now they're at home twiddling their thumbs, sort of not trying to catch up, but not knowing what to do, you know.
Mm. Okay, let's listen to the anomalies, and that's another one. The NEF would say they can go, but the school say they can't, because he has been fully vaccinated. Sean Casey in Roscommon. Werner is in Wicklow, I think. You're in Greystones, is that right, Werner?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
What's your situation, please?
Well, I have two, basically, you know, small kids, you know, so
okay.
And you know, they're only back to school basically for a few days now, and you know, and they got sick, you know. And I'm basically very concerned about it, you know, because I think the government is not doing enough, basically, to protect our children.
And what should they do? What should they do? Okay.
They should do a regular, basically, systematic antigen test, basically, to avoid that, basically, people who are infectious or children who are infectious, they come into school and infect other people, other children. It proves very successful in loads of other countries.
Okay, antigen testing. Yeah. What's happening in Germany? I mentioned this earlier, and you were my contact.
Yeah.
What's happening in Germany?
So, in Germany, basically, you know, everyone who goes to school basically is tested on a Monday, on a Wednesday, for example, and at home. And then basically the parents have to fill in basically the test result and bring it to school, and the school teacher checks it, and only if they are negative, they can go to school. And I think just because of a few people from NEFET, they gave this antigen test a very bad reputation. And that's wrong.
But you said the argument, it's quoted in the Irish Times today, the argument is that the state don't want to medicalise school too much. They don't like the idea of testing children once or even twice a week.
Is it better, you know, they get sick? You know, so yeah. It's not only my opinion. For example, a German politician called Karl Lauterbach, and he's a pandemic expert, he was asked, basically, how could Germany get the figures from the beginning of May, the incidence rate from 169 to 35? His answers were, first, vaccination progress. Second, good weather, people meet more outside. Third, was systematic testing. You know, and these are figures, you know, people just ignore from 169 to 35 in a month. Yeah, so.
Now, remember, you're right in saying that from the get-go, there seemed to be an attitude among the decision-maker, the medical decision-makers here and the Axum academics about antigen testing. It was so cheap, so easy, so available that some of them, didn't one of them call it snake oil? But then I think he rolled back on that subsequently. But that would have influenced the atmosphere and the attitude to antigen testing, that somehow it was... it was heebie-jeebie or voodoo, so which is not, of course. It's been widely
you know,
Luke O'Neill has been advocating it. I think he's horse at this stage. Werner, your children have just been tested anyway.
Yeah, so basically, you know, I'm not suggesting, you know, that antigen testing should replace PCR tests.
Yeah, of course not.
You know,
it's another weapon in the armory, and it's an easier one to use. Short,
yeah, it's just something, you know, which basically protects our children much more, you know. And all these reasons, you know, I can't understand, you know, because our 10-year-old or 8-year-old children, they're not going to go out basically and have a party because they have an antigen test done, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so cheap. And, you know, and the other thing is, you know, Ireland would get a handle basically on the virus, you know, because you would get so many positive results, so you would actually know where the virus is. Now, basically, we just basically walk behind the virus and wait till somebody gets infected and sick. In this case, we prevent basal infections and we are ahead of the virus.
Yeah. Okay, Werner. I hope your two children come back negative. Thanks indeed, Werner. Don Harris, before the break. Don, back to college places again. We're jumping from one to the other, which is great. That's what people... This complete jumble that's so many anomalies. I don't think there's any two anomalies the exact same, but people feel very aggrieved about this grade inflation and who has been thrown under the bus, so to speak. Don, your point, please.
I feel desperately sorry, Joe, for the people who have made the grade, done all the work, done everything they were asked to do, and now the carpet has been taken out from under them to do the courses that they really want to do. And you linked it to the fact that Trinity is closed at the moment even. Look, people were given everything they could possibly do to go to Trinity College, to go to UCD, and here they are being left. The government or the education authorities, in my opinion, do not seem to have moved heaven and earth to find the spaces. And why, anyway, with all everything, education being online so much now, is it that there are so few spaces, or at least not enough places? Everything has gone online. People have been online for 2 years now, educating themselves in some way. So I don't understand how there is so few places. It's not ideal for a student to have to go to college online, as it were.
Yeah.
But it's certainly very doable, surely. People are meeting globally online all the time. And I feel there's so many spaces that should be made available and that should be looked into. The other side of it is we have so many foreign students that are not here this year. They're not able to come. There's all those places that gave education to them. Of course, it was mostly English. But all the spaces are there. The ability is there. Of course, you know, it's not ideal again. But we have to think laterally outside the box and do something for this whole generation, now 2 years, this year, who are not getting the opportunity. And they're not going to thank us, and they're not going to thank the authorities for leaving them in the lurch. I didn't get a chance to go to college. I would have loved to have gone to college.
Fair play,
It's something I get so so much pleasure walking through Trinity even now, thinking about...
You can't walk through Trinity.
Exactly.
Listen, it's a complete aside, sorry.
And they've done everything. It means so much. We need to move heaven and earth. The government moved into the convention centre for all their meetings.
The pandemic has
dropped a hat.
And the pandemic has proven, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that education... When we look at all the experts that have kept us going on top of the vaccination program and the pandemic and the variants, education makes a difference. It does make a difference, and especially all levels, but third level does make a difference. Okay, Don, thanks indeed. We'll go on to Trinity Gate, as it was mentioned as an aside, and I was looking through the calls and I saw calls. We didn't do it because I don't think we realised, well, does it make much of a difference? I don't know. That Trinity College has been closed to the public for nearly 2 years. You can't go in. People, the security stop you at the gate and turn you away if you want to take a shortcut from Clare Street out through the front. It's a beautiful, beautiful walk through the rugby pitches and the rubrics and front square and the statues, and it's completely in the open air. But anyway, they're closed to the public since March 2020, and they told us today they have absolutely no intention of changing that policy. Brendan.
Hello.
Trinity Gate, what happened?
Yeah, I was in Dublin for a long weekend over the final weekend of August the 30th or so, and it was beautiful weather, and I'd actually was lucky enough to get tickets to go to the Abbey on the Saturday, I think it was.
Okay.
And I came out of the matinee there at the Abbey, and I took a friend of mine who was over from England. Oh, I'll give a walking tour of the city. So, you know, we wandered up to O'Connell Street, and I showed her the GPO, then we crossed over to the south side to Trinity Green, and I said, I'll take you through Trinity College.
Yeah.
The gates were closed. I mean, obviously, I haven't been there for about 2 years because no one's been going anywhere. We're supposed to be having this great outdoor summer.
Yeah.
And Trinity College must be one of the most iconic buildings and sites for tourists.
It's 100 acres in the centre of Dublin. It splits one part of the city on the south side from another because it's such a large space.
Well, I was going to walk through the quadrants and then cut out Nassau Street and take it along that way. So I just shrugged my shoulders, but I had no idea it had been closed for 2 years. I thought maybe it was just something over the weekend or something going on at the gate. And, I mean, they're telling us, let's keep outdoors for the summer, etc., etc. And they close off the biggest outdoors tourist attraction in the city. I mean, I think, did they speak to Forfar Island about this? Because they're nuts.
Yeah,
and it's crazy. I mean, it's a man in the state. You can't walk through the fresh air at Trinity College because you might catch COVID. I mean, what kind of baloney is that?
And some of our best experts on COVID are in Trinity College. And Luke O'Neill is there. But anyway, Dave, and lots of others.
Maybe they should remove their heads from a certain part of their body and come out and smell the roses in the real life.
Well, remember, Trinity College is a private institution in that sense. It's run by the board of Trinity, who are a self-perpetuating group. There's one taxpayer appointee or whatever. But anyway, unless things change, they're closed. They've closed the gates and access to the 100 acres of open air, mostly open air in Trinity. They've closed it for health reasons.
Well, the gates say you can access the college by Nassau Street, but I couldn't walk down there.
The only health reason is that Dubliners and lots more people who take the straight line shortcut through or across diagonally, they have to walk about five times. Maybe that's the mean.
They don't want the plans going in there.
Well, I don't know. No, they don't. Maybe they want Dubliners walking more. Okay, Brendan, go to Mila Mark and Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Philip was fielding calls yesterday about feral cats and what people were doing. Apparently, what the DSPCA were saying, there's a white van man going around, and if you give him money, he will trap the feral cats in your area and not have them spayed, but actually drive 50, 60 miles and dump them somewhere else. Now, apparently, there are 200,000, not feral cats, but colonies of feral cats in Ireland. 200,000. Ger, good afternoon. I know you're an animal lover, member of Birdwatch Ireland, but what did the feral cats do with your Japanese fish?
Well, if you want to put it in euros, 300 euros worth of a fish, he was about the size from my elbow to my wrist. And this was about 2 years ago. I opened up the curtains and there he was on the footpath in the back garden with a cat next to him, a feral cat, dead. Yeah. So just before I start, the cats, basically, Joe, what I do is I put up nest boxes in my garden and I freeze that down the back of the garden, etc. And cats mainly hunt at night, right? And the amount of devastation that they cause to the bird population in Ireland, people really actually don't realise. And they can hear the breeding of the chicks as the chicks get older. And also, when chicks, young fledglings, when they start to practice to fly in the nest, they start to fan their wings. And the cats can also hear that, right?
Okay.
Now, a few years ago, I had nest boxes, blue-tipped and grey-tipped nest boxes. They're approximately 15 foot up a tree, and I put them up with a ladder. And I went up one day and to check on the progress, and I had lids on the nest box. And I opened the lid, and the nest was gone. And I couldn't understand it. And then a few days later, I saw this cat at the bottom of the tree, and he was looking at the box, and it was empty at this stage. And I just kept watching him. And then all of a sudden, he didn't climb the tree. He ran straight up the tree. It was incredible. He ran up. He was up on top of the box within 3 or 4 seconds. Straight up. Vertically. But then I realized, you know, that I had a problem. And I realized my fish were going missing. So what I started to do was I started to trap them.
Okay. And how do you trap feral cats?
I used a wheelie bin. On its side, empty.
Yeah. Yeah.
The lid would be up, held by a stick, and then I'd have a rope going to my back door, a sliding door, and chicken fillets inside the wheelie bin, and the cats would go in. I'd be sitting there on my chair in the kitchen, drinking my tea, hours on end at night, and I'd pull the stick, the door would go down, then I'd put the wheelie bin in the back of my van.
And how many feral cats did you capture in the wheelie bin?
I was thinking about that now, yesterday and today. Definitely over 10 and less than 20, but approximately 15. And what I would do then is I'd drive them out to the countryside about 3 miles away from my house.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just opened the back of the van and released them. Now, there was a tomcat, and he would stay around the wheelie bin and watch the other cats going in.
He was well aware
of how the trap worked, so he never went near the wheelie bin. And in fact, one night, a fox turned up, and I couldn't believe it. The fox circled the tomcat, and the tomcat just sat there looking at the fox. The fox would not go near the wheelie bin. So basically, the tomcat was protecting the food source, which was the wheelie bin. Eventually, I caught most of the cats, and I just kept the wheelie bin up all night, and I'd come down in the morning, and the chicken started to disappear. I then knew it was him, and eventually one night I got him. And that was important because he was the guy making the babies, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy making the babies. So I put him in the back of the van, I drove off, and then I heard a lot of banging as I was driving in the back of the van. He was a huge animal. He was the biggest cat I've ever seen. And then the banging stopped.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he jumped in to the front, onto the passenger seat right next to me. He looked really surprised to see me. Not as surprised as I was, I tell you that. Oh, God.
So out of the wheelie bin onto the steering wheelie. He's there in front.
Onto the passenger seat next to me.
Yeah.
And then he stared at me. I stared at him. I was still driving. I pulled over as fast as I could. And then it started. He hunched up. He started to hiss and the fangs came out. I thought, oh, dear Jesus in heaven. And he ran across the windscreen, used my head as leverage and jumped back into the van, back into the back of the van. I jumped out. I opened the back of the van. He was in there hissing. And he looked, he was staring at me, he wouldn't come out. Eventually, after 15 minutes, about that, he jumped out. I never saw him again. And
where do you know where he jumped? Where what part of the country were we in at this stage?
Cork City, let's say.
We had an animal lover in, there's many, but the main animal lover in Clontarf was a woman called Myrna Russell on Sea Park Drive, and she was the person that everyone went to if dogs were missing or if there was a colony of feral cats. But what Myrna would do was, she died unexpectedly in March, but what she would do was she would capture the feral cats, but she, out of her own money, I hasten to add, would have them spayed and then release them. Would you not have had Tom, the cagey cat, the wheelie bin to the steering wheelie, would you not have had him spayed?
Well, it was only listening to your show yesterday that I realised that that service was available. I didn't realise it was available. And also, I thought at the time what I was doing was illegal. I didn't realise that I was quite entitled to do it, to protect my fish and to protect the birds in my garden. So I actually didn't realise that that service was available, you know. After that wheelie bin incident, I said, I'm never going to do that again. So I went to the Cork Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, and I got a cat fat from them, and I started to use the cat fat. And one of your listeners yesterday also said the vacuum effect, and I found that, and eventually that when, like, there was about half a dozen feral cats in my area, but as soon as they went, within a month, then there was another colony. So that's how I ended up.
And you wouldn't, catching. You know the way cats aren't very loyal. They do ramble, but they are family pet. Now, there can be two or three families think they have the same pet at the same time. But how do you know they were feral and not family pets?
Yeah, the feral cats are skinny and not well fed. And I did see two family cats. When the feral cats disappeared, two family cats in my garden, one of which I caught in the trap twice. And I brought that cat back to its owner. I found out where the owner lived, and wasn't very close to me. It was a good 10-minute drive away. And I explained that I'm catching wild cats in my garden because I have a fish pond. And the second time I brought the cat back, the owner understood. Of course, it was the next morning when I'd find the cat in the trap. And eventually, the owner, I don't know what the owner did. Maybe the owner didn't leave the cat out anymore. I'm not too sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the fish, the carp that were eaten, the Japanese fish, etc.
Yeah.
How long were they resident in the pond?
Oh, yeah. I've got a guy there now. I named him after my son. My son was 2 years old at the time, and my son is 24 now. So that fish is 22 years old.
Okay. And your man, in that case, it was catch 22-year-old cat.
Yeah.
22-year-old fish.
Japanese koi fish are very, very naive. They just come to the surface. If they see something, they think it's food. Mm. And that, you know, the cat that caught that fish 2 years ago literally was only the size of the fish.
And you're in Birdwatch Ireland. Have you got board boxes?
Oh, yeah. The problem with the cats was the open-fronted nest boxes. I lost the wren's nest. I was devastated at that.
And how did it get up to the board boxes?
One was on a wall and one was on a tree.
Okay.
As far as I'm aware...
Okay, Ger, stay there for a second. Claire is on the line. Joe at RT.ie. Claire, good afternoon. You're listening to Ger.
Hi, Joe. Oh, my God. I bawled my eyes out. Absolutely bawled my eyes out to hear that man. The cruelest, most inhumane... Oh, my God. I don't care. I love birds. I don't care if he lost €1 billion worth of a bird. You do not...
It was fish. It was fish.
Fish.
Yeah.
You do not just gather up cats, drive down the country and just dump them wherever you like. How is the poor cat? It's not the cat's fault that the cat is a feral cat. Not the cat's fault. How is the poor cat just dumped somewhere else meant to get... He would have been better off to bring the poor cat to the vet and put the cat to sleep rather than just drive around the country and just dump the cats wherever he chooses.
And is it the image, his chair's description of the wheelie bin on its side and the spring and the stick and the sliding door and the chicken fillets, and then they would be, they'd climb, they'd go in after the food, he'd pull the stick from his, he'd be sitting in his living room or his kitchen or whatever, the door would close, and then he'd stand up the wheelie bin.
No,
it's just that we're talking about animal cruelty. He's not evil. Let's Chair, would you want to respond there, please?
Yeah, well, basically, first of all, I wouldn't bring the cat to the vet to be put down because I don't believe in that. I'm an animal lover. So my solution, instead of putting them down, was to relocate them. And because they're feral cats, they would survive. They eat wildlife. You know, so it wasn't cruel in any way. They were just relocated.
But did you take them one by one in the wheelie bin, or would it have been four or five of them in the wheelie bin?
No, absolutely. Only one, you know. And I would do it immediately.
And what do you think of Claire saying she cried listening to the way you were doing it?
Eventually I did change to a cat trap, which I thought the cat trap was smaller, the wheelie bin was bigger. At the time, I didn't realise I could get a cat trap. But, you know, for Claire there... I had tiny cameras and I would film these birds. So I was filming a pair of robins, and I had the camera so close that it's as if the camera was right up to the nest. And I was watching this pair of robins, beautiful bird, close up. Mm. You know, they're a stunning bird when they're really close up. And I was watching them with their little brown eyes feeding their four chicks for weeks. And then one day, the nest is gone because of a feral cat.
But we do live in nature. We live in a predaceous world.
Yeah, Joe, the cat...
Animals live on animals.
Yeah, I know that. But what I mean
it's not just a circle of life. It's a circle of death.
Yeah, but
in the animal world.
Yeah, on your show yesterday that they said the population of cats in Ireland is 700,000. It's just the devastating effect that they have.
There are 200,000 colonies of feral cats in Ireland.
Wow.
Claire, Jer's description of the robin there being so beautiful, I presume you'd be able to give us a similar description for your love of cats.
Absolutely. I mean, if you go on to any, like, SPCA site in Ireland, you will see poor feral cats like in absolutely and break your heart, see the appalling condition that those cats can be found in. It would have been more humane for him to even if he was to bring a couple of cats to the vet to get neutered, then he is reducing the feral cat problem in Ireland. But by just what good is it to relocate the cat? I mean, that is doing absolutely nothing, only protecting
Claire. If I got the cats neutered, right, then where were the cats going to go after that from the vets?
Well, it's a better solution to at least neuter a couple of cats than to just dump an intact cat somewhere else in the country. All you're doing is protecting your your fish. You're only protecting. What? So you're dumb. You could have another person with fish or birds or whatever, 50 kilometres down the road, and you're just dumping the cat that was tormenting you
And Claire, what happens? What happens a wild cat? What would have happened to Tomcat when he's dumped into a completely strange area? Would he have survived? Do you know?
Yes. He would.
He wouldn't have tried to make his way back to your wheelie bin.
No, the feral cats would survive, without a doubt.
What do you think of that, Claire? Cagey Tom would survive anywhere.
I just think... Sorry, what's the man's name?
Jer.
I just think Jer is just concerned with his own interests, and he has absolutely no interest in what becomes of the cat. He actually couldn't care less. Once the cat is gone from his place, he could not care less what happened to the cat. And that's just so, so sad.
Okay.
I understand Claire's point of view, I do. But unfortunately, what she said is I agree with. I was protecting my own fish and the birds, the nesting birds in my garden.
Claire, many domestic cats do you have?
Four.
And what are they called?
Cotton Socks, yeah. Coco, Peaches and Callie.
What's the first? Sorry. Carrie.
Sorry, Mia. My little Coco died, yeah. Mia.
Oh, Coco died. Okay, Mia. It sounded like a recipe book at one stage. What were you doing? Coconut and what else were you... Anyway, they're lovely names. And you
Peaches,
loved them.
Yeah.
You loved them.
I absolutely loved them. Like, they don't go outside. They're just pure house cats.
Oh, are they? And where would they sleep at night?
Oh, they have... Two of them are in one room. One of them is in another room and another one is in another room. I can't have them all together at night because they would fight.
Oh, would they?
Yeah, they don't really get out. I have to kind of keep them separate. But
And are they related to each other?
Peaches and Callie are sisters.
Okay.
And Cotton Socks is 13, so because she's 13, like, and she,
and
you know,
is,
she doesn't...
Is there a dominant cat? How does a little colony like that work?
There's probably two dominant cats, my oldest and my youngest.
Okay.
And Mia was a little barn cat, so it's just so funny. She's the cutest little thing, and... But she would come in and like try and fight with my oldest cat, Cotton Socks. I mean, I have her inside now about 4 years, and it doesn't change. So I just keep them apart.
Keep them apart. Okay.
Keep them together if I'm there.
Okay.
But if I'm not there, you know. But I mean, you know, I see feathers out in my lawn that some cat has killed a bird, and yes, it is so sad. But I mean, you know. Nature is nature.
Okay. Claire, thanks indeed. And I'm sorry you were upset at that description. And Ger, thank you also. Joe at rt.ie, 1850 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Back to grade inflation and the... it's buried in... It's 180... page report, but it's on the State Examinations Commission website. So I asked people to read it because they are conscious of inflated grades and teachers, maybe teachers in certain... Anyway, it's different in different areas. In some areas, the teachers know the parents personally. In some areas, they don't. I know when I was growing up in Ballyfermot, every teacher left the school car park and drove out of the area. We never had a local teacher because there wasn't many in that... In those days, whereas in other areas like where I'm living now, the teachers are from all around the area, so people know them. Ned Allison, Nell, what's the anomaly that this situation... So, by the way, my point is the State Examinations Commission said the grades, they believe, assessments by teachers were 32%. They wanted to drop the grades by... in 32% of cases, because they reckoned the teachers had inflated them through no fault of their own. But they felt if they dropped them if they challenged 32%, that this would have completely undermined the system. And I'm sequentialing this, inter alia, the teachers would have pulled out of the system, and therefore you wouldn't have had the teacher assessment going forward. Nell, what's your situation, please?
So I sat my Leaving Cert in 2019. And because of the grade inflation, I'm left 1 point short of the course that I want this year, even though I would have gotten into it any other year bar this year.
Okay. And you're sure you would have got... Well, insofar as you can be sure with a system that's based on supply and demand, it's based on the number of people applying for the number of places available, and that's the algorithm for the points. So... Between the Leaving Cert and the HPAT in 2019, you got 763.
Or 73.
736, sorry.
Which is literally 1 point short of NUIG medicine this year.
But in 2019, when you did your Leaving Cert, you would have had a surplus.
Yeah, I would have had like 10 points for the year. 2021 is the only year that I would have not reached points.
Oh, God. And what do you plan to do now, Nell? It's a terrible blow to all these students, but it's not the end of the world, but it is a terrible blow. And this system now, this dual system, or as one parent called it, a triple system, you get a chance, you can say, I'll take all the teacher grades, assessments, I take all the written exam results, and then I take the best from both, And I don't have to do, I can decide not to do the exam at all and just take what the teachers give me. So it's multiple choice almost. And Nell, what do you plan to do?
I am currently in biomedical science, so I'll probably continue on with that. But I just think it's so unjust that other Leaving Cert years are being compared to a year where the grade inflation has been proven. I just think it's crazy.
Yeah. Did you get any of your, from your choices back? No, where does the point you got in 219, what would they allow you to do now, Nell?
I'm currently in biomedical science, so I'll probably stay in that course.
Yeah. Okay. Nell, thanks indeed. Deirdre, too, sorry for holding you there. Deirdre, what's your situation? It's your daughter, Rebecca.
Yeah, hiya Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Rebecca done her Leaving Cert in 2020, and obviously the results came out on the Monday, and Rebecca got 531 points, so she was thrilled. She thought she had 10 points to spare for her first choice, which was science and UCD. So, lo and behold, the following week came and no offer came for science. It had gone up by 12 points to 533.
Okay.
So she missed it by two.
And then,
so
the class of 21.
Yeah, so she went back to her class actually on her own in November 2020 and sat her two exams that she was downgraded in with the bell curve. Because she got the H1 and Irish off her teacher, 91%, but the bell curve brought it to 89%,
yeah,
which was 1%, but 12 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then last Friday when we heard, so she sat the exams, didn't improve her points, stayed at 531, and everybody told her just to go ahead and apply for this year, that of course it had to sort itself out. But then on Friday when all her friends were getting their points, and they were all 577, 600, you know, 550,
I just
knew over the weekend, I went, this isn't good. So she got an offer yesterday, her fifth choice, and she was, yeah, absolutely. She didn't stand a chance with the inflated grade, you know. And all she had, she didn't get the choice last year to sit or, you know, take the best of both. So,
these situations are dreadful. Okay, Deirdre, that's Deirdre Chute in Donnymead. 51551. Let's take a quick break.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
There seems to really upset everyone with his wheelie bin truck. But remember, he said he didn't kill the cats. He said he was capturing the cats and just bringing them to a different location. And feral cats, apparently in the UK, kill 100 million creatures every year, and 27 million of them are birds. And they are affecting different species that have evolved over millions of years. Jane McGarry, your daughter... What happened?
Yes, they can kill an awful lot more than birds and other creatures. My daughter, somebody was feeding feral cats near to our property. And my daughter, obviously a little girl at the time, loving cats, was getting close. And, you know, eventually they'd been fed for enough time that they allowed her to stroke them. But they were carrying ticks, and the ticks were carrying meningitis.
Oh, my God.
Our daughter contracted meningitis, meningococcal septicemia, the very worst form you can get. Went into a coma, wasn't expected to live. I can only talk about it because it's so many years ago now. It was just the most horrific experience you can ever imagine. She was in a coma for a long while. It took her months and months to come back, you know, to full
health. And it was conclusive that it was the feral cat carrying the tick.
Yes.
My God.
And I found the tick after she'd recovered. I found the shell of the tick, if you like, in her hair above her ear.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know why I didn't think of it at the time, but I just remembered when she was stroking the cat that she, you know, kind of brushed the side of her head.
Yeah.
And obviously that was a tick, but she didn't think it was...
Okay.
She didn't realise she had a big lodge.
She made a full recovery,
I hope.
Oh,
complete.
Oh, brilliant.
Well,
so what should we do? Oh, sorry, no, tell me.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are, you know, a few just maybe lingering things from the meningitis, but nothing much, you know.
Okay, spay feral cats, that's your message. Okay, today's programme was produced by the series producer Rebecca Meehan, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.